shopping the way the government's engaging with Khalil by moving him down to Louisiana to a more to the fifth federal district, where it's a little more onerous for somebody like Khalil to fight for his civil rights. You had the less friendly districts. It's called forum shopping. So we see them, you know, shuttling people around and using exposing the inconsistencies of the judicial system.
Yeah, I'm not sure that might be less new. I'm not sure about that one.
It's less new, but it's also being exploited in such a bold way that I don't think we've seen before, in such a obvious, blatant way.
Right. But trying to use this kind of brute force against academic institutions, journalistic outlets, and law firms is... I'm no historian, but in my reading of the coverage of this, it doesn't seem to be any precedent for any of that, other than maybe McCarthy, but I think this exceeds even that. And I gotta say, like, you know, doing these things, I've even started to think, oh, geez, should I be outspoken on this? Should I be going on record and saying, you know, if I can't do it, what's tenure worth if you can't do this? So I don't know. I don't think I'm target number one.
Well, I really appreciate the time. Adam Sobel from Columbia University, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome. Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Beastie Boys and Elton John.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Had him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Carolyn Sapinka. She is the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden. Carolyn is talking about Earthen Elegance, the ceramic art of Bizen, which is on now through June the 9th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for visiting the garden and covering the show. We're so excited to share these ceramics with our audiences.
This is a beautiful show. You've just got the Pavilion Gallery. It's brightly lit. Most pieces, these are contemporary ceramic pieces. Most of them are some kind of vessel. Some are purely sculptural. Most of them are brown or bronze colored. They are fired in this, they are come from a 900-year-old tradition in this town in central Japan called Bizen. And it's the tradition was revived 100 years ago. And now, even today, contemporary ceramicists are using this style to produce this amazing work. It is very sculptural. Mm-hmm. What was the origins of this? Why is the clay this way? Why do they fire this way?
Yeah. So as you enter the Pavilion Gallery, I think you'll be immediately struck, especially in our cold weather outside, by how warm it is in here. Not just the temperature, but the pieces themselves are so fiery. Just as you mentioned, there's these beautiful warm browns actual scarlet cords in some of the pieces, they really evoke nature and earth, which is part of the reason why we're so excited to showcase this with the backdrop of the garden, evoking nature. And Bizen, as you mentioned, is this very ancient ceramic practice, which continues to flourish today, as potters in the Bizen region continue to operate over 300 kilns. So people are continuing to draw on these ancient materials and techniques of firing to create new pieces that people continue to enjoy around the world and in Japan. So Bizen has its roots, as you mentioned, in ancient history. It came to a special prominence during the Momoyama period, when there was a real draw to finding pieces of ceramics that were very simple, rustic, but still elegant and unfinished. So instead of moving to something that was a little bit more glamorous or polished, finding pieces that really evoked nature in their forms.
When was the Momoyama period?
In the mid to late 1500s. So during this time period, Bizen ceramics were especially valued for their use in tea ceremonies, when this tradition was especially popular. Since then, different ceramic traditions rose into fashion, but over the last 100 years, Bizen has especially experienced a revival in interest. Kiln technology that was used at the outset of the Bizen ceramic tradition has been revived. So many of the pieces here were created in these beautiful kiln structures called Hanagama kilns. Mm-hmm. This means tunnel kiln. So these are these really long kilns that are built into hillsides in Bizen to create these gorgeous pieces here. The artwork is fired at extremely high temperatures, and the coloration that you can see isn't due to glazing. It's actually due to the firing process itself. So the mineral-rich clay, which is dredged from the Bizen region, the reaction of those minerals to the high kiln temperatures, and the artist's careful manipulation of the firing practices, which they've developed over generations, has created the beautiful array of colors and textures and techniques that you can see in the gallery. So no glazing, entirely the firing process, which is truly remarkable.
Mm-hmm. If you said to someone in Japan, like a ceramic lover, Bizen, they immediately think of this style.
It's an extremely iconic style, as you can see.
It's the name of the town.
Yes.
So it's kind of like a ceramic town. It's like one of their big draws.
Exactly. Bizen is known as one of the Rokoyo, or the six ancient kilns of Japan. So these are kilns throughout the country that have different ceramic traditions, forms, and styles. Bizen is one of them, and it's extremely iconic, as you can see here. And we're so pleased to showcase 26 different artists who are working today in Bizen, and all of the artwork on display is from the collection of David Snyder and Naomi Pollock on loan to the garden. So we're very excited to show artists, some of whom are very well known and have been shown in exhibitions and museums throughout the country, such as Jun Isazaki, a living national treasure, but also some lesser known audiences. And this might be their first introduction of these particular Bizen works to American mm-hmm. communities.
The collectors lived in Japan for 30 years and now are back here.
They did, yes. They lived in Japan for 30 years and developed relationships with artists, or prominent art collectors who really support Japanese arts and culture, especially ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned that of the ceramic traditions, they're particularly drawn to Bizen for the ways that artists today continue to use the ancient techniques and materials from history in their current practice. So really honoring the traditions mm-hmm. That are at the outset of Bizen ceramics.
What was that word for the six kilns of Japan?
Rokoyo.
And so that's just like a cultural designation.
Yes, I believe it was an academic designation that a ceramic scholar labeled these kilns as mm-hmm. in the 1940s. And now the kilns are heritage sites, officially recognized heritage sites mm-hmm. in Japan.
They're just so kind of organized, you know, they're living treasure artists. At the north end of the pavilion gallery, in these two long vitrines, you have just cups. These are simple, you know, like 12-ounce cups. These are not for alcohol or for tea. You know, they're probably just water cups from the house. But they're all contemporary. But you have so many of them to show off all the contrasting shapes and finishes. So you have one here by Shinichi Yokoyama. It was made in 2009. And it has flat facets to the cup, maybe 10 size. You've got it on a rotating sort of podium. Tell us about the sort of general gray turquoise color is interrupted by olive colored streaks and then orange patches. Do you know how the artist did this? Because, yes, as you said, there's no glazing. This is the raw one-time firing of the mineral-rich clay.
Yes, this piece is so beautiful. As you mentioned, it has a real variation in color, which is fascinating that this was just created through placement in the kiln. So really, the artist was so clever at manipulating where the flames would hit the piece and how that reaction would take place, creating this beautiful variation in the darker oranges that you can see that transition to the lighter silvers.
Mm-hmm.
So this really evokes a concept that's at the heart of Isan ceramics called Yohen, transformation through fire, which is where the magic of the ceramic practice is. Mm-hmm. Through the reaction of the high kiln temperatures to the mineral-rich clay, creating all of the beautiful color effects that you can see.
How long would a piece like that need to be in the heat?
Typically, I believe Isan kilns are fired for around 2 weeks. So the fires, as I mentioned, extremely high temperatures, they must be burning 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of effort to create a firing process. But these are single-fired ceramics, and generally, yeah, around a period of 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So if, for example, they put an object next to a cup, which ended up changing the color, you know, it made an orange circle, that would only happen if it was in there for 2 weeks. It's not happening in a flash, like, or you don't put it in for an hour and take it.
Right. It takes time for that transformation to take place. So it does take time as well as careful planning. So a lot of these effects and firing effects that you can see were passed down over generations and refined, such as the piece that we're looking at now by Shin Ishizaki, which is a really great example of botonochi. So in this case, the artist placed small pieces of clay in between two cups in the kiln. And as the pieces were fired, you can see the marks for those little balls of clay that resemble the treat mochi, mm-hmm, rice balls, were left with these beautiful orange circles on the sides of the piece, which have turned something that was functional into a decoration. Or, for example, this piece by Jun Ishizaki right next to it, which is a great example of hidasuki. So if you look at this cup, these gorgeous scarlet cords intersect the cup, has a beautiful cream background. And this is where the artist actually wraps the piece in rice straw before placing it in the kiln. And as the rice straw burned off, the potassium in the straw left these beautiful orange marks. So a transformation that almost looks like a painting solely through the firing process.
The orange streaks over the sort of olive-colored raw clay, you know, are vertical. Did they wrap the cup vertically? Not around the circumference of the circle, but over the top, over,
exactly,
the around the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
What is it in the minerals that causes this sort of orange color you see everywhere? Is it just iron, or is it more complicated?
Primarily iron. The clay is very rich in minerals in the Bizen region. And I believe there's many types of clay, but two in particular, Hiyose and Yamatsuchi. Hiyose is dredged from underneath rice paddies. It's a little bit darker, and Yamatsuchi is a little bit lighter. So you can see the variation in different kiln or clay types in these pieces, as well as the grit. So as you can see, these aren't smooth pieces. There's little bits of stone and particle matter, and that's called grog. So some artists have chosen to keep that to really evoke nature in the pieces. Mm-hmm. Whereas other pieces are a little bit smoother, more refined, so really reflecting different artists' tastes and styles.
So this is Sazaki piece, which is a cup with, also has facets, but they're in the lower half, the outside. The rough bits, were they actually rough bits in the clay? These are not superficial things that happened in the kiln.
Exactly. That is a conscious choice to really keep the texture of the clay uneven, to show, to create this beautiful rippling surface that isn't perfect. It really evokes wabi-sabi, imperfection and transience and nature. You can really see that this is an art form that's rooted in place. The clay is from the place of Bizen, just as the artists are of this place and practice there.
Mm-hmm. There's so much beautiful art to look at here, but we should just look at this illustration of the cave kiln itself. So the kiln was built with brick, I presume, into a side of a hill, and you start at the bottom and form the fires at the bottom, load the kiln, then form the fires. There are windows on the sides so you can regulate temperature, and then at the top there's a chimney. So I presume you've got this draft of air kind of roaring through this quite big space. It could be like 20 feet long. perhaps?
Yes, extremely long. And it's such a unique kiln structure that we really wanted to show an illustration so you can see what goes into the creation of these pieces. So exactly, the fire is typically built at the entrance of the kiln, and then the pieces are stacked not just at the entrance, but all the way through the kiln. And it's through careful placement of the pieces, what's in front of them? Is there some kiln armature that might be blocking the flames from hitting a piece that creates a lighter surface of the clay versus a darker one? All of this is really carefully strategized by the artists to create the surface effects that you can see. And the firing process, typically over 2 weeks, very high temperatures, and it's that combination of the temperature, wood ash, and the placement of the pieces that creates the beautiful surface effects in the gallery.
Mm-hmm. We make pottery today in an electric kiln. There's no contaminants, but this was wind, air, hot air blowing over wood, burning wood, ash everywhere. And it's not like there was a glaze, you know, where it sticks to that. This is wood ash hitting mineral-rich clay and still producing effects, a lot subtler than effects you get in other types of ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the people who excavated these kilns and brought them back? And did they actually build some new ones?
Yes. So these kilns were at the heart and the outset of the Bizen tradition. But artists such as Mitsuru Isozaki and his brother Jun Isozaki. And Jun Isozaki is a current living national treasure whose work we have in the gallery. They rebuilt these medieval style tunnel kilns and resurrected the firing techniques that were used throughout Bizen history. So it's just really incredible how these techniques have been passed down over generations and continue to be used by artists today. I might have mentioned there's over 300 operating kilns in Bizen today. So artists are, it's a really flourishing style. Artists are continuing to innovate while still relying on those techniques that have been passed down and really treasured and refined.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a beautiful practice that really speaks to this marriage between the past, the present and the future, like honoring the past while still continuing to innovate.
Mm-hmm. Is it one of those crafts where, you know, you have to be like 10 generations in before people would take you seriously?
Maybe. There's definitely a lot of family connections, as you can see in the gallery. So I mentioned Jun Isozaki. His son, Koichiro Isozaki's work is also on display, as are his nephews. So there's relationships in terms of lineage, but also mentor and teacher and student.
Mm-hmm.
As people form the community in Bizen, these techniques are shared. And I imagine they also work together to do the firing process often, which is quite an endeavor.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Carolyn Supica. She is the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden. Carolyn is talking about Earthen Elegance, the ceramic art of Bizen, which is on through June the 9th. There is a great piece by the doors that look towards the east, and it's like a slab-made vase. It's flat, rectangular, quite narrow, maybe 4 inches deep, but 2 feet by 1 feet. So imagine a big rectangular vase with a rectangular hole in the top. But then it has these flares that come out the top, almost like a garment that's hanging up. And these cuts in the bottom region, and the whole base is slightly curved, so the edges are lifted off the ground. So the label just says Hiiro.
Yes. So this is an artwork by Jun Isozaki, living national treasure, and it's a really gorgeous piece. It is, yeah, a slab vase, and you can really see how the placement in the kiln and the firing process created the surface effects that you can see. On the right, there's almost like a solar flare of a lighter version of the clay that fades into a darker umber. You can also really see the texture of the clay here. There's a really lovely ceramic term, tsuji-aji, which is clay taste. So not necessarily actually like tasting or sampling a piece of clay, but appreciating the body, the texture, the material aspect of it that you can see really prominently in this piece.
Mm-hmm. Most of the piece is brown, or it's kind of golden orange towards the bottom, but there's this sort of gray semicircle coming from the right. So it goes gray, orange, brown. So what caused that shape?
That was from the flames reaching the piece at certain areas and not others. Mm-hmm. So though the entire piece was fired to create this, it's a type of stoneware, ceramics, some pieces of the clay were more directly exposed than others, which create that beautiful firing effect, which is spoken to about in that label that you pointed out, Hiro, which is fire color or fire markings. It's the quality of how the flames in the kiln influence the final coloration mm-hmm. of the piece. So whereas a painter might consider where they're going to put their brush, a clay artist might consider where they put their mm-hmm. piece in the kiln. That's just as much an aspect of consideration that will produce the final artwork.
If the listeners can imagine, the kiln is this long tunnel built into a hill. Inside there are steps with all the artwork that's going to be only fired once, sort of in a particular order. But you said it might fire maybe once or twice a year. So everyone is bringing their work in, and who gets to decide the order? You know, are they in there crawling around in the dark trying to figure out where the shadows will be, where the fire will be strongest?
Definitely. So these are kilns that you do enter. As you mentioned, you can walk inside the kiln and determine the placement of your piece, although you might need to crouch down quite low. And it does vary artist to artist, but I believe many artists, or some of them at least, have their own kilns. So you can determine the placement of your piece and over trial and error. And mm-hmm. potentially if this piece was passed down or owned by other artists, you would inherit that knowledge of where you can place your pieces to create the effects that you intend.
Oh, okay. So it's not as random as I think. You're dealing with these fluid dynamics in a space, but they're predictable over time.
Exactly. All of the surface and firing effects that you can see, there is an element of chance in the magic, the yohen that happens during the firing process, but it's also carefully manipulated. So these are master artists and craftspeople who have refined these techniques over generations to create the palette that you can see in the gallery. Mm-hmm. So there's that magic and element of chance. All of these are very carefully considered expert maneuvers as well.
You've arranged four in the center of the room. It looks like three vases and a sculptural piece, a piece by Izuru Yamamoto. It looks like a wave or it's a vessel, but it's got so many different curves and it's all built about as slices. So it's just a very complicated shape, but the finish is all very much dark brown. The variations are, you know, brown or light brown. It looks like a bronze, actually. It looks like it's made of metal. Do you know much about Yamamoto?
Yes. So I believe that he was an artist who developed this really unique technique of almost layering. Like you mentioned, the scalloped edge of the piece, it's very organic. It is a vase shape, but it almost looks like an impression has been left at the center. It's truly gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And this was developed through a layering of two different types of clay. So while most of the clay that's seen in this exhibition is Bizen clay from the Bizen region, this was a layering almost of two types of clay, mm-hmm. Bizen clay as well as clay from the Bourgogne region of France, or Burgundy. So instead of like mixing those clays together, he left them striated. So you can see the different shapes and textures.
Was he working in, you know, he's rolling out flat strips of each kind and just alternating them maybe?
I believe so. Yeah, this was a hand-built piece that was mm-hmm. created through careful layering of those two different types of clay.
Kind of the most complicated coil part I've ever seen. It does begin like that. At the bottom, there's a small round base with three coils with grooves. And then it just takes off. It becomes this twisting, blooming kind of flower shape. If you stand over it and look down, it looks like an S shape. It's an amazing piece of sculpture. Do you know if this artist does this kind of experimental shapes? Do they just stick to this signature or do they have all sorts of style?
I'm not certain. I know that many of the artists in this exhibition do work in series. So I imagine that this particular style is one that Izuru Yamamoto has developed and is present in several of his artworks. Mm-hmm. There's another piece by him in this exhibition just across the way in which you can see a little bit of the same form developed, although in a very different execution of the style. So this is a beautiful, more traditional looking vase that's directly on the side of the pavilion that overlooks Mount Hood. Mm-hmm. And there's these beautiful circular differences in color that emanate from the center of the vase. So these are actually not glaze, but different slips that have been applied over top of the vase that have different levels of minerals in them that create these beautiful colors.
Yeah, so it looks like a big flower pot, maybe a foot tall with a wide mouth and a very thin, you know, thin walls. But he's made these concentric circles kind of slip. Do you have any idea how he got them there? Did you paint them with a brush?
I believe it was slip that was painted on. Mm-hmm. And then texture was also applied through a small tool to create the beautiful kind of like fan-like structure that you can see.
Right, so it's concentric circles with zigzags that cut across those circles. Just a simple form, but highly decorative for this, you know, Bizen style. Right. And then as part of the three in the middle, two of them are not vases. This one is it hollow? It looks like an obelisk.
It is hollow. Yes, this is a really beautiful piece by Shinichi Yabe titled Tsukuyama Moon Mountain, in 2012. Something that's really beautiful. So ceramics are a really important part of Japanese culture. They're used in a variety of practices, including tea ceremony, ikebana, and bizen really evokes nature through its shape and texture and the materiality. An appreciation of ceramics can also extend to the way that landscapes can be evoked in ceramics. So I love that we placed Moon Mountain. We can sometimes see on clear days Mount Hood behind it as well. So I love that the landscapes of these pieces are kind of, you have the backdrop of our beautiful Oregon landscape just behind it, outside of the gallery doors.
Mm-hmm. Where would this piece end up, do you think? This is a sculpture designed for someone's home, right? Indoors.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fine art.
Yes, definitely fine art. It's just a really gorgeous sculpture.
But in this context, you know, in this gallery, you can think, oh, this is all like highly valuable art, you know. But you said some of these people are like emerging artists. Some of these people just work at their own little studio and they maybe sell stuff on the side. I always think, as in the West, we always want to figure out what's the most valuable thing about this piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it fit in? But in this context, this is a real mix.
Yes, this is an exhibition of 26 different artists, around 40 pieces, and all contemporary artists, as you mentioned. And we do have some artists who are probably familiar to American audiences, particularly those who are fans of Japanese pottery and bizen ceramics, such as Juno Sasaki, our living national treasure. Ryuichi Kakurazaki also is an extremely prominent, iconic bizen operating artist. But we're really pleased that this exhibition also shares some lesser-known artists. So we're excited at the fact that this exhibition might be introducing some artists who are at the forefront of the bizen tradition, who are not yet known to American communities. And this might be people's first taste of both bizen as well as these artists' work.
You talked about wabi-sabi. This, in 1500, they started appreciating the imperfection of things and sort of elevating things that were not highly refined. Where does that mentality stand today? That kind of aesthetic, is it prevalent?
I think that there's been a renewed interest in objects that are imperfect, and that really you can see the artist's hand in making them, sometimes literally, impressions of fingerprints, of the sculpture and shaping of these works. I think that's something that people today are really drawn to, things that really connect us with each other, with nature and with process, as opposed to product. I think that's something that's really beautiful about the bizen tradition that is really immediately apparent. I think that many people who come to see this exhibition will now have an idea like of what makes an iconic bizen piece so visually distinctive and be able to recognize that.
Maybe in wabi-sabi, the idea of accident, things happening by accident, is more prominent, because we appreciate handmade goods, you know, for stitching and you know, labor-intensive stuff, one-off forms, but not so much accidents. This is taking an old aesthetic and keeping it going in a very Japanese way. I don't think in the West we do.
Right, and that's something that I think is really connected with Portland Japanese Garden itself. The idea of impermanence in the way that nature is present in the garden, in the world around us. Like, I can see some of the beautiful markings that just happen through chance or through careful manipulation in the kiln, and then look outside and see the way that a cherry tree has grown in the wind and been shaped by the elements around it. I think that there's such a connection between wabi-sabi and its presence in the art form here, as well as the garden outside.
I think that's a very good way of putting it, that everything is changing here all the time. You just embrace that. Whereas other people are, everything's on a schedule if it's changing, or they don't want things to change.
Thank you so much, Joseph. We're so excited for communities to experience Earth and Elegance, the Art of Beads and Ceramics. As you mentioned, the show is on display through June 9th, so you'll get to see these pieces amid the changing backdrop of the garden through the seasons, the blooming cherry trees in March, and as we enter summer. And it's included in the ticket price for the garden. We're open Wednesday through Monday, and we're excited to welcome you to see the show.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Carolyn Supinka, the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden. Carolyn was talking about Earthen Elegance, the Ceramic Art of Beeson, which is on display now in the Pavilion Gallery through June the 9th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for visiting, Joseph. I'm glad you enjoyed the show, and we're so excited to share Earth and Elegance with our audiences.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Estás escuchando a KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM, K2H2 BH Philomath en el 104.3 FM y K220 HR Hood River en el 91.9